Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Matt Spiegel got on with some takes that were pure gold.
A little too much Parkins.
Afternoons on the Score.
Bellinger cracks one in the air. Deep right center. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
Hey now, Eloy Jimenez. Hello.
I wish all of you could be right here at this moment. Unbelievable atmosphere.
There are still tickets available. It's going to be fire, I'm telling you.
Opening day, Cubs and Sox, a couple of days away, and you got to go see Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Thursday doing the show, 10 to 2, Wings and Rings on Halstead. Join the Score and Modelo at Wings and Rings as they get you ready for the White Sox season opener.
There are some things to be excited about with the White Sox, but it is a smaller list than there are to be excited about for the Cubs. Bigger picture stuff we will get to at different times, but I've always loved this tradition that we have on this show and certainly in this slot. And in our lives, you did these with Mac.
Yeah.
I did these with Mac. And, you know, and then you and I have done them. Some Cubs Sox bets, storylines and thoughts on both teams that get tied into to numbers we can track all year long.
Yes. And so we all submitted two. And then we're going to work through them and see if they are good together. And it also was kind of an exercise to think about like the show and storylines and all of that. So both of us submitted one that had our guy Nico Hoerner and stolen bases attached to it.
Because whatever we choose on this, we'll get a chance to try and manipulate the bet and talk directly to the subject, starting hopefully tomorrow.
That's
and,
right.
And then all season long.
Okay, so you did Nico Hoerner steals.
Uh-huh.
Against the top two White Sox players for steals.
Yeah, right now, Luis Robert, Andrew Benintendi, and Nicky Lopez are your top three projected stolen base guys for the White Sox. That would add up all three of them to 37.
For what they did last year?
No, the projections for this year.
Oh.
Looked at stat projections for this year. Robert last year had 17. And Nico had 43. So I thought I would give you Nico against any two White Sox players, the top two. I wonder if that's too easy. Do we have to give Nico against the top three? Underpinning this is my belief that stolen bases are actually going to rise this year, even you know, a little bit. They did last year, but now teams have the data and have the analysis on it. 80% success rate is freaking crazy,
right,
all around the league. So I think if I had to take the over on Nico's 43 steals, I'd probably go over.
You think he's going to have more than 43 steals this year?
Man, if he's healthy all year.
Well, I mean, I love talking about these bets with you. It's the greatest. Because you're like, if he's healthy, yeah, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You're like, the floor is 80 wins.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't consider injury.
They hit that last year.
No, they did. They did it.
Just for the record.
No, but yeah.
Even with a September fall apart.
But that would be one of the issues of taking one player against three players is that one player could get hurt and it would derail it a little bit. So injuries is a part of it.
Yeah, but, and we don't know exactly how aggressive Council's going to be. Nico will be down in the lineup sometimes.
That was the thing that I was considering. A few fewer at-bats and plate appearances for him, batting lower in the lineup, maybe not as many pure steal opportunities.
Yeah, and depending on the aggression and who's up next and all that stuff. So I feel very comfortable with Nico against the top two White Sox players combined.
Do you guys think it should be three or two? Does it matter?
I mean, we don't know any of these players. Outside of Luis Robert, we don't know any of the other guys that will be stealing bases because the other ones there from last year do not steal bases.
Yeah, the way we see it as the White Sox observers here, it doesn't matter. Pick anyone you want, two, three, because they're all going to be playing faster. Right,
yeah,
so it could just be anyone, you know?
Yeah.
It's just fast is the word.
Yeah, I guess the word of the day is fast.
So anyone, doesn't matter.
It's the word of the whole spring, baby.
They're just so fast. But you don't typically steal bases when you're down 9-0.
Ooh. This team better not with all that character. Actually, I hope they do. I would love that.
Go ahead. Get beaned.
Imagine
all
that.
All right, so we're good with that.
So you do what you want, top two or top three?
I'll take top two.
Okay,
I think it's a walk, but we'll see.
I don't know. That makes it less interesting. Okay,
and maybe Paul DeJong has an explosive year.
Okay,
tell you what, you want to give me PCA? This is my other thought. Give me PCA for when eventually he comes up. Won't be here that long, probably. But give me Nico and PCA against the top three. Huh? Want to do that? Too complicated?
Too complicated.
I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do with your bets, so you do what you want with it.
Too complicated.
Okay.
Nico against the top two. Whoever it is for the White Sox, stolen bases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My Nico stolen base one was I wanted to figure out how many bunts the White Sox were going to have. The Diamondbacks led baseball with 36 bunts last year.
Mm-hmm. They're the only team over 30 with bunts. We know they're excited about bunts.
They're very excited about bunting.
Yeah, John Schriffen has told us that on like three different broadcasts.
It's going on. He's the State of the Union address.
I want you to bunt. Guys, bunting. We saw sack bunts.
Yeah. He broke into Top Chef the other night.
Surprising.
And told us that the White Sox are going to bunt a lot.
I don't know why he was there.
I didn't even know they owned Top Chef.
All right, so that feels... If you think the stolen base number is going to go up, that feels like it maybe shouldn't be Nico Horner steals. Maybe it should be like Ian Happ steals against White Sox bunts. How do you feel about that?
That's pretty good. I think that's kind of interesting. Let me see where Happ was last year. Yeah, something else in the 25 range, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. See,
Michael Busch homers.
Oh boy.
Michael Busch homers. Against White Sox steals or White Sox bunts. Now we got a bet.
That's good.
Okay.
That's good. And then we get Michael Busch involved. That
Michael Busch homers.
Big storyline that needs to be involved.
And it's also kind of poetic that on one side of town it's about homers and on the other side of town it's about bunts. So, all right, Michael Busch homers against. This is why we do. We submit things and then we work it through on the air and try to come up with a common ground. All right.
So, because losing cleaner. Is my ideal White Sox slogan for what they're trying to do?
I still haven't seen a billboard anywhere that suggests that.
No, it's just mine. But I was thinking about team defense. I looked at defensive run save, but I don't have one that makes sense there because the Cubs were sixth in team defense and the White Sox were 30th. And they were 28th the year before. So I can't go straight up on team defense. I know they're going to play cleaner. I want to acknowledge that and reward that. But I can't really figure one out for White Sox team defense.
I think that just sounds like the 1040 segment on Hit and Run. Just acknowledging that they're now 21st in team defense instead of 30th is what that sounds like to me. I don't know that necessarily needs to be in the 4 p.m. hour on a weekday.
I can't believe I signed up for this level of abuse.
I'm just saying, I don't. What do you guys think? Do you guys think White Sox.
We're just checking in with these things.
Does defensive run save have a place? I think that's more of a hit and run thing to me, personally.
Yeah. Can we just get like to my philosophy on this stuff while you guys think of some of those things over? Like, I just think. Home runs. Home runs, that's like my North Star in the baseball universe. It's exciting when they happen.
You like home runs.
It's easy to keep track of them.
Ball go far, team go far.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's why I like two home run props here for North Side v. South Side. So we can get to those now if you'd like. Go for it, sir.
So yours are much simpler than ours.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, sometimes we get too cute with this stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
often.
Because home runs are often circulated on social media, right? So it's like you can say, hey, here's my guy with the bomb here. Uh-huh. You know, he's coming for you. You know, whatever. Who cares? So the first one, I'll go, you know, probably the two best all-around players on each team. Two center fielders, Luis Robert home runs versus Cody Bellinger home runs.
Luis Robert against Cody Bellinger.
And I know Robert had much more than Bellinger did last year. Robert had 38. Bellinger had, 29 or 22, I think. So I know there's a little bit of gray area there, and you would think, oh, Luis Robert has a clear advantage, but that could be seen as a career year for Luis Robert last year, right? He had an amazing year, MVP candidate. And I don't know if he's going to hit that many again this year.
Yeah,
you know,
I was told
a knock, you know, but it was a lot.
I
was
26 for Bellinger.
I was told recently that health actually plays a role in achieving some of these season totals.
Thankfully, Danny was here to point that out to you.
Yeah, thank God.
So that's another thing too.
So straight up, Robert and Bellinger home runs.
Yeah, just look at Robert throughout his career. Like he was never like truly a home run just juggernaut like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he broke out last year, so I think he's going to come down a little bit. And Bellinger, I'm rock solid on Cody Bellinger. I'd love that. That they brought him back. I think it was important. And I love watching him hit. I love him watching, you know, hit bombs off the scoreboard, you know. So
yeah.
I like those two guys head to head all year as the best all around players on each team in home run totals. So.
Okay. I think that makes a ton of sense. It's funny that, like, when we submitted Nico Horner stolen base ones, I think the Cubs were probably a favorite in the ones that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Tanny submits one and the White Sox are a slight favorite in that bet, right? I would install Robert as a favorite over Bellinger for home runs this year.
That's okay.
But it's fair. It works. I like it.
I need to do one more for Robert here because I agree that Robert is the best all-around player on the White Sox. But the best all-around player on the Cubs by WAR last year was Dansby Swanson. So Dansby, and there we go. That gives us shortstop versus center field. And according to wins above replacement anyway, Luis was a 5.0 and Dansby was a 4.9. I know it's a little bit in the weeds. Bellinger was third. Nico was second on the Cubs. Because not everybody will check wins against replacement. But I know a lot of people will, and I sure will. So Luis versus Dansby as your best all-around player will watch WAR accumulate through the year. I'd like to contribute that one.
I like it. I like it. I feel like Dansby, again, back to the health thing, the guy tries to play every damn game, should have... I guess I'd install him as a small favorite.
By virtue of their both their positions, it ends up helping them both defensively.
Ton of defensive value.
Ton of defensive value.
For both of them. Yep. Yes. Okay.
So I like Dansby versus Luis.
Good bet.
As an even bet and wins above replacement.
What's your other simple home run one, Danny?
It's
counting stat guy.
Yeah, I am, yes. It's Eloy versus Seiya home runs. I love the long ball. I'll say it again. And this was interesting because a lot of people think, you know, if Eloy can stay healthy this year and he can have a monster year with home runs. But as we know, it doesn't happen traditionally with Eloy. So he's the guy with the higher ceiling for home runs. People project him somewhere in the 30s. But Seiya last year did not have a monster home run season. But playing with a lot more confidence this year, I think. You saw him two bombs yesterday, I think. Two for two.
Finished very strong last year.
Finishing strong. So I think that's going to be a part of it, too. And I think he's got a shot to get up near the 30 threshold for homers this year, Seiya does. So, and I think Eloy, if he just has an average season, he can get there relatively easily. So I like that, you know, all year long is something to follow.
I think that's a really fun one, too. Incredibly important dudes who people know. Seiya, in his last 47 games last year, had 11 homers and an OPS of over 1.2. You know, they just like a ridiculous finish. So, yeah, people are projecting him for that. One question about that one. Do Eloy's home runs count if they happen for another team after the deadline?
Of course, because the only way he's going to win this is if he's playing inspired and he's hitting a lot of bombs so he can get out of town.
You know, Eloy, like the way Jorge Soler and others like catapulted the Braves to a World Series a couple of years ago as a power bat ad, I feel like Eloy's ripe for that this year.
I think it's good.
All right, so Eloy versus Seiya home runs.
Can we just table this for 1 second? Because this is my favorite text so far that we've gotten today. How about things that matter for the White Sox regular season? It's a funny segment idea. Just saying. Spring training, bring it in. Mm. We actually were thinking about something similar to that before the show today.
We're still trying to find some.
So. I know.
So there's a few. Find some.
It'll be a short segment.
There's a
end
few.
Of the hour. End of the hour.
When is Brian Ramos up?
All right.
Danny's excited about that one.
Can't wait for it. The idea of the White Sox opening day starter having so few career innings pitched and Mully calling him the opener day starter and everything that comes with that is just amazing to me. Like, how many innings is Garrett Crochet actually going to pitch this season? He's thrown 73 innings in his career.
Oh, boy.
Hector Neris, the big addition in the Cubs bullpen, is one of the most used relief pitchers in the sport. So Garrett Crochet has 73 career innings. Hector Neris, the last three seasons, 70 appearances, 71 appearances, 74 appearances. I give you Garrett Crochet innings against Hector Neris appearances.
Oh, man.
How do we feel?
That's rough.
How do we feel?
That's, you're basically predicting injury for Garrett Crochet.
But, I mean, or is he just going to always be a, you know, 20 starts at three innings, you know, that he'll never really progress past opener?
And also with the volatility of bullpens, who knows if Neris has that many appearances, innings pitched this year. You know, it's very volatile, those bullpen guys.
Yeah.
He's been very solid, obviously, but you never know with those pen.
I mean, Crochet should be the favorite.
Well, yeah.
Crochet should throw 125 innings.
You talk about things that matter. If Garrett Crochet can be healthy and throw 125, 130 innings, that would be a great development for the White Sox because his stuff is fabulous.
So, but I mean, maybe it's a terrible line. You tell me, how many innings do you think Garrett Crochet will throw this year?
I don't know. 100? 110, something like that.
I was thinking 90.
Okay.
Yeah.
90 be a disappointment,
yeah,
though, right?
It would. Yeah. I mean, the White Sox are a disappointment. It would be right in the theme of what they are.
All of these are tinged with disappointment.
I mean, Luis Robert could have a lot of bombs. Yeah. He could have a lot of bombs.
That's true.
That one was positive.
Uh-huh.
Tanny Jaime, is it a terrible number? Is he going to have 150 innings pitched? And no, I'm just insane here.
No, I don't think so. You know, I think that's a good number. That's the number I had in my head. You know, so it's like a lot of things we still need to learn about this Chris Getz regime and how they're going to view starting pitchers. Like, we don't know if they have a plan for Crochet just yet in terms of opener, and someone comes in and piggybacks every time. We just don't know, and I don't know much about how many innings and where his body's at in terms with his rehab from last season and how stretched out he is. Like, we just don't know, because they have a lot of arms that they had in camp, so we don't know how many of these guys they're going to rely on all season. Like, we may see a lot of pitchers up this year, you know, because of stuff like this. So there's a lot of unknowns here with Garrett Crochet and just with Chris Getz, I think.
No, yes. I think leave it. I think your doubt about Crochet is shared by a lot of people across the industry. He had a hard time staying healthy as a starter in college. So,
I'm not rooting for injury. I'm just saying the idea of an opening day starter who has this few career innings, who might be actually an opener and not a starter, is a very weird thing.
Yeah,
and I think it deserves to be monitored.
I think the opener thing is more due to his ramp up from the aforementioned rehab, and eventually you're hoping he's a 5 or 6 inning guy at the very, very least.
Well, then he will have more innings than Naristo's appearances.
I think your doubt could live though, so let's keep it.
Shane submitted Andrew Vaughn walks against Patrick Wisdom homers.
I was dubious at first, but then I looked at the number and he's not crazy. I mean, Andrew Vaughn walks the last 3 years. 41, Shane. 31, 36. Patrick Wisdom homers, 28, 25, 23.
Yeah, I mean, I am not high on Christopher Morel at all. I think Christopher Morel is volatile, and he could either be a superstar, but more likely he's a big fan. I mean, I get too much Javi Baez from Christopher Morel in a bad way. I just do. I mean, you could be the fun, energetic guy in the dugout. Great, fine, awesome, fun, energetic on the field. But I think his glove is going to take him away from third base. He's not going to get as many at-bats as everyone thinks he does because he's not a good defensive third baseman. And I think that is going to mean that Patrick Wisdom, a very good defensive third baseman, in my opinion, will get a lot more at-bats than people think. And Andrew Vaughn, I have no faith in him. None.
It's interesting because Wisdom is so specific with his power and like the matchups that they come against. I'll be really interested to watch Council use him. Like, how much he's going to get used. And Wisdom will get used a bunch at first base. I think Wisdom, when he's healthy, will be like he might be straight platoon with Michael Bush. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, that's fun. And then we could have Patrick Wisdom on the show and talk to him about it.
Yeah. So he's got, Wisdom's had 3 straight years of over 20 home runs.
Wow.
Okay.
The Morel hater, man.
Not a hater. He's great for baseball. I just think his glove is going to play him out of at bats.
You don't think that they would just find at bats for him at DH?
I mean, it's a heavy lineup. They've got a lot of guys that they're going to be moving in and out of DH.
He's got a lot of power, though.
Yeah.
We'll see. I told you, I think he's going to swing and miss a lot.
Yeah, he probably will. Sorry, so Andrew Vaughn walks against Patrick Wisdom homers.
And Justin Steele strikeouts versus Yoan Moncada hits. Last year, Justin Steele, year of his career, obviously, he was an all-star. 176 strikeouts. I think he will regress. 140, 145, and assuming health, when Yoan Moncada really, really, really needs to prove it, I think he could have close to that in hits, maybe 160, 170.
God, you've got a lot of faith in Moncada.
I do. I like Yoan Moncada. He's got to prove it. He really has to prove it, and he's got to do it right now.
He's got to prove it for his next team.
Yep.
Exactly. It's a big year.
Yeah.
It's a big year, and often the motivation does come. Yeah, no, that's a fun one. I would take Steele for a variety of reasons.
I probably would too.
But it's a fun one.
It's going to be close, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we got Steele involved in the bets. All right, so good. So what do we have? We got 6 of them. We got 8, 8 of them.
We got 8 bets.
We got 8 of them. I like it. We could think about what players are missing, what storylines are missing, if there's anybody that we want to follow along with. But I think this is fun.
I mean, yeah, what do you think the biggest one? I mean, I'll follow the whole team and the seasons for both, you know,
Thank you.
Regardless of the bets.
Appreciate it.
I'm just gonna do that. I'm gonna make my pledge to try this year. I'm gonna sacrifice for the good of the show.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like it's hard thinking about Michael Kopech, because I don't know if he's gonna be the closer and get save opportunities, and they're not gonna have a lot of wins that need to be saved.
No.
Leads are necessary.
Also, they don't have a closer.
No,
as per Pedro, they don't have one right now.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean when I'm talking about this team and how they're looking at things. They maybe be looking at things like in a little bit of the modern era context, where they look at leverage. I believe in having a closer, having a guy who knows his role.
Even Council does. You know, I think it's
what
about
is that supposed to mean. Well, even Council, he's a great manager.
No, but I mean that even people who don't believe in a defined closer often end up believing in a defined closer once they take the temperature of the personalities. I think they're holding closer over Kopech as a carrot.
Yeah, I think a lot of times those guys reveal themselves as opposed to I'm anointing you this guy,
right?
And they just wait for that guy to grab the brass ring there.
Right.
I think that's what will happen with Kopech.
I think it's Kopech and Jordan Leisure that they're thinking about as possibilities, and they want to see if Kopech will rise to that sort of mental and motivational challenge because he hasn't as a starter. So I'd love to think about Kopech, and we will, but I don't know that there's a way to tie him into a bet.
When you've got 8 closers, though, how many do you have? You don't have any closers.
That's what they always say. Oh, famous expression. All right. That's our 8 bets that we'll follow. We will post them. We will follow and track it throughout the season. More from Kevin Warren on the lakefront and Hard Knocks and all things Bears coming up at 5. But the scandal that is overshadowing baseball and one that is just absolutely laughable in the NBA. Parkins and Spiegel on the Score.
Hey everybody, we are live.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Strange twists and turns with the guys over there on the Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Afternoons on the Score.
We're having a little fun.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports. Up until a couple days ago, I didn't know that this was happening. Just to kind of just go over the result, in conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
So that's Shohei's new interpreter.
It's the Dodgers director of performance sitting there next to him. I was struck, Danny, by the fact that nobody has interpreted for Shohei Ohtani in America since December of 2017, other than Ipe Mizuhara. So it's like, this is 7 years, man. 6.5 years. This is one of his absolute best friends he's been close to since his early 20s. Guy who was his driver early on, lately has been his dog sitter, his catch partner. Like 365 days a year, his ride or die. And now he's accused of stealing, and he's got to work with somebody else, and all of this is happening, and you can choose to believe what you like at this point.
At this point. So, on this story, where as long as he did not bet on baseball, and there still continues to be no evidence that he did, I find it to largely be a salacious story, but not a terribly substantive one.
I think it's good. That's interesting. I was talking to somebody yesterday in the baseball industry who still thinks it's entirely possible that the contract is going to get voided. Like, it's going to go so bad that the Dodgers will take an opportunity to void the contract. Because even if he didn't bet on baseball, that there is betting and there is illegality and there's some suspensions. And obviously that would be incredibly drastic. But like, that it's on the table that he's in big, big trouble with the Dodgers still. So I don't know.
I think to be clear, I think everything's on the table. If we are to believe this version of events, it's pretty salacious. It's embarrassing. But I do think it falls more under the Phil Mickelson purview of, whew. And that's Phil Mickelson actually doing the gambling. But you know what I mean? Like we've known about high-profile athletes gambling and it not really being a problem other than it's just something that we mock them for and the internet goes crazy when he stands next to Mookie Betts and it's like, oh, Ohtani Betts. But the thing that I'm waiting for here, is he going to press charges?
Ohtani going to press charges against Ipe?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Because if he is, maybe it gets taken out of his hands and it's all federal and all of that. But like this guy, if he didn't do this, he's facing identity fraud charges, wire fraud charges, federal charges of betting in places where it's illegal, mm-hmm. going across state lines, all sorts of things. I mean, he's facing real prison time. So if he didn't do this, and he's just being the fall guy for Shohei Ohtani,
which a lot of people believe,
this is the greatest friend in the world. I mean, he would be facing, if he didn't do it, if he is covering for, if Shohei Ohtani is the whale soccer bettor, and Ippe is falling on the sword, and he's going to just go to prison for all that, I don't know who your best friend is. Would your best friend go to prison for you? For something that they absolutely did not do? So I'm waiting to see that part of it.
Yeah.
The criminal part of it. Because right now it is basically just public allegations. Yeah, he stole from me. There's an investigation into this bookie. This guy got caught up in it. Mm-hmm. My name was on a wire fraud. Who's going to jail?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's going to tell me a lot.
Well, we've got the feds. We've got the feds here. And so obviously that will happen. And from the Dodgers' perspective, if Shohei just went up there yesterday and just flatly lied about this stuff and that gets exposed,
that'd be a terrible look.
It'd be a terrible, terrible look. But, man, it's...
Do you agree with whoever you talk to in baseball that thinks the contract could be voided?
Because no,
the story that is being told right now, mm-hmm. I would put the over under at 0.5 games of suspension and take the under.
It's on the
story that's being told right now.
Interesting. Yeah. It surprised me. It definitely surprised me. But he assured me he's not alone. That there's a lot of people who think that this is far from done in terms of the truth. And that some consequences could be coming Shohei's way that are much more serious than what is being bandied about right now.
I think everything's on the table here. I just, what that is out right now would lead him to be suspended.
Yeah, no.
He had money stolen from him and the other guy did the gambling.
It's a question of whether you believe what's out right now.
Or if they can prove it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people do not believe what is out there right now. And with the feds digging, then you never know exactly what you're going to end up with.
Yeah, I tend to not believe it, but that guy is looking at federal charges, man.
Yeah, no, I know.
At this point, this guy is a criminal. So I just, it is bringing it back within the realm of possibility to me that Shohei was taken advantage of.
Well,
that he was. Hey, I have no idea what's going on with my money. You know what I mean? I'm naive to it. I deferred all of this money. Mm-hmm. I trusted this person. He's my closest confidant.
And also,
taken advantage of.
When we know that Mizuhara is a guy who lied about his bio, he's got some George O'Leary in him lying about his bio in the Angels media guide for years.
Yeah,
and you know, it made up an apparent relationship with Hideki Okajima from two different teams who said, "Yeah, this didn't happen.
Yeah.
He never even worked for us." So this guy definitely has some grifter tendencies here.
So right, so that's what I'm saying. Since we last talked about it at the Thursday at Real Time Sports, I'm like, all the things that have come out have made the interpreter look worse than Shohei. Mm-hmm. Not saying that can't change in a day, an hour, or a month, but for now. If this dude's going to prison, that's one hell of a fall guy. One hell of a fall guy. Have you followed the Jontay Porter story?
I have.
In the NBA?
Michael Porter Jr.'s little brother on a 10-day, two-way contract with Toronto. And, oh, look at that. The unders hit huge in two different games of this guy's recent stint with Toronto.
This story is laughable. Like stupid criminal stories, you know, like you rob a bank and you don't have a mask on type of things. Uh-huh. Like you punch your hand through a glass window and you're not wearing gloves.
Sure.
And then you ended up having to call an ambulance for yourself because you're bleeding. Uh-huh. Like this is
you leave your wallet behind.
Yeah, this is like world's dumbest criminal stuff. There are Discord chats on the internet, like Reddit, Discord groups or whatever. And I know Reddit and Discord are different things, but basically with Jonte Porter's username where he is talking about bad crypto coins, Bored Ape NFTs, long shot pie in the sky financial stuff with people in the communities talking and thanking him for making him money on NBA stuff. There are screenshots of an $80,000 same game parlay with six Jonte Murray prop.
Jonte Porter.
Jonte Porter, excuse me. Parlayed to the under to pay out $1.1 million. Catalogs to games where he's pulling himself from injury.
Yeah, well, in the two games that he pulled himself, one he said he re-aggravated an eye injury and had to leave, and there's no video from that game that shows him hurting the eye or even pointing at his eye or anything. And the other is he left a game because of illness. And those are the two games where the unders hit. I mean, this looks like textbook, open and shut. Let me go ahead and be an accomplice with gamblers to make some money while I'm on a two-way contract and I might never stick in the NBA.
Yeah, he hasn't stuck in the NBA. He's made less than $3 million in career earnings. He's making $400,000 this year. And this is where, as someone who has been advocating for the legalization for gambling for a long, long time, and again, like, disclaimer, we do commercials for it. It supports our industry.
Oh, dude, there is no moral high ground on this.
No, but what I'm saying is, this is a blind spot by the legalization, by the DraftKings, FanDuels of the world.
Because DraftKings, by the way, both mornings after those games, in their official report, showed the biggest winning bets that night were on Jonte Porter's unders.
Well, that's the thing. They can tell you a story that, hey, the system worked. We caught it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he telegraphed it. He got very greedy. He did it again. And I would ask you, a dude who's making $400,000 in the NBA, should a non-limited VIP account at DraftKings be able to bet $80,000 to win $1 million on the backup power forwards unders?
Is that what the bet was, or is that an approximation?
No, that's what the bet was.
$80,000 to win $1 million.
$80,000 to win $1 million. I have the screenshot. My buddy got sent the screenshot within 2 seconds of the Woj story. Wow. Posting in this like gambling group that he's a part of.
So people knew this and they were hip to this.
Yeah, the gambling world knew about this.
Of course.
And like the deep corners of the internet knew about this. And
so no, you shouldn't be allowed to place those bets on people that low. But, you know, what if you're following the team and you think you're a sharp and you're like, I think Jonte Porter is going to enter the rotation. That's what I think. I think he's going to get used a lot tonight.
Well, then, maybe you shouldn't be able to bet millions of dollars on guys where $1 million would drastically impact their life. Like, I don't think LeBron, like, to me, that is bad risk management by, in this case, it was DraftKings. Not picking on DraftKings. It could have been FanDuel. It could have been anybody that allows for the parlaying of player prop bets. Not all of the books do, but let's just use the two big ones amorphously
this
here.
This is going to give people some great ideas.
But I'm just saying, man, like, it, on one level, it's a perfect crime because he's a bad player who had a bad game and he cashed in. But then he did it again and he bragged about it on the internet. Like, you're done. He'll never play again in the NBA. It's
he
over.
Shouldn't.
He will be banned for life from the NBA for sure.
All right, so everybody's been looking for a moment of reckoning for sports gambling as an industry, and I agree that it doesn't look like Ohtani right now is that moment of reckoning, and we'll see what else comes out. We'll see what happens when the bookie is testifying and maybe gets flipped by the feds or all that stuff. I mean, we'll see, but it doesn't look like that necessarily now. Do you think the Jonte Porter story is a potential reckoning for the NBA? Is this going to slow down the NBA one bit on their desire to monetize and commodify everything via gambling?
No, but I think it is going to give the FanDuels and DraftKings of the world pause on the types of bets that they allow, even to the VIP accounts that aren't marked. Like, just like a small amount of it. They'll say, wait a minute, we should not, we have to be a little bit more careful. Like that is a short-term gain. Let's take 80K on this bad bet and not, it's bad risk management. It's bad exposure on something that could very clearly be manipulated. Jonte Porter seems like the kid who fell for the get rich quick schemes of the internet, right? Bitcoin, crypto, NFTs, etc.
Using his 10 minutes in the NBA.
Had a little money in his pocket, found someone to put a huge bet down on himself, hit, and then did it again and got caught. And now he'll be he'll almost assuredly be banned for life.
I like the point that Shane made that if you're Jonte, I mean, your older brother got the junior. I mean, Michael Porter got the junior. So you're already operating from a place of diminishment on the personal level. I think that's a great point by our birthday boy. Happy birthday, Shane.
Happy birthday, Shane.
Break.
It's Parkins and Spiegel on the score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Twitch and YouTube wants to see Whitey.
Come on over here, Whitey. Say hello.
What's up, Windy City?
Afternoons on the score.
Yes, texters. We realized that the next commercial was a sportsbook ad. Trust me, we're aware of all of this. By the way, Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi are heading to Circa Resort and Casino in Vegas. Thursday, April 11th, Friday, April 12th. God. They'll be broadcasting live from 10 to 2 both days at Stadium Swim. It's their For the Win event. If you want to experience this with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi, go to CircaLasVegas.com for more info. So they'll be out there for the Masters.
See, that's the thing, Danny. Like, I'm old enough to remember when you could come up here as a host and have some moral high ground about gambling. You know?
I hated that time.
Well, it's impossible now. As, yes, I just read a sportsbook ad. As you and I do a gambling cast sometimes for an alternate baseball broadcast on Marquee. It's like these things, we're all intertwined and everybody's intertwined. And this idea that there's still some possible separation of church and state, some kind of line that these pro sports can be drawn is just, it's getting more and more laughable by the day as all these stories come out.
Can I point out a massive difference to you guys, though?
Sure.
Neither of us, neither Dan, Lawrence, Layla, you guys, me, Tanny, are competing in the Masters. So we can bet on the Masters.
Right.
You know? That's the big difference here. Like, the big problem is
these guys are
doing it. Devontae Porter did it while competing in the NBA and then through his games.
Sorry, Shane, I didn't want to belittle you on your birthday.
We're
supposed to announce it in the five, but
top 70.
I am actually going to be in the Masters.
I was wondering why you were featured on season 2 of Full Swing on Netflix. Why did I keep seeing you standing up there with Luke Donald?
Tanny's only there so we can go and hang out in Butler Cabin and wait for Jim Nantz. Just wants to be there when Nantz comes by.
Yeah, Jimmy said he's going to be there.
He's always there.
He loves it.
I think he's there now. He's just
Jimmy Butler?
Yep.
That's what I was referring to.
Jimmy Nantz, he's either on the 16th hole at Pebble Beach. Is that the one that's right by his house? Or he hangs around and
he's got a replica of the 7th hole at Pebble Beach in his backyard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I saw him there last year. He just handed me his tie. I said, I don't need this.
It represented a lot to him.
Well, this is the year, right, where he's going to just go to the Final Four
with his kids
to do the presentation on the court and then go to Augusta. So Ian Eagle gets to call the Final Four, but Jim Nantz wants to still be there for the presentation.
I didn't know that he was still going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I got to ask him. Can you imagine if Buck said, hey, Joe Davis, listen.
Yeah.
Tell you what, you do the games.
You get the World Series, but I get to be on the field presenting that piece of metal. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, Ian, we don't want to freak you out, but Jim Nantz is in the crowd tonight with his family.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Jim's taken the liberty of scripting out a few lines that maybe you'd like to use for your final call, depending on who wins tonight.
Yeah, and Tanny did reference my favorite part of that story. Like, yes, and I'm a huge Jim Nantz fan, and he's been great to the show, so I would say this if he was on. Like, yes, the ego of, like, I want to be the guy to do the presentation, but he also couched it as, like, and I just want to spend more time with my family. Yeah. So he's just going to bring his family to the Final Four and watch it with them, and then they can watch Dad go out on the court and present the trophy. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous.
It really is. It really is. Well, you know,
I love it.
If anybody's entitled to have an ego about certain events like that, I suppose it's Jim Nantz.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So good. It's so good. But yeah, I don't think the leagues are going to turn down the gambling money at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to just be like, don't play. or like the players and our personnel can't do it. All jobs, many jobs have regulations of things like that,
sure,
like that you can and cannot do.
I mean, Shane is, of course, 100% correct at the big difference between us being commodified and, you know, guys who play the sports and women who play the sports being commodified. But it's the appearance of control that seems to matter less and less. That's the erosion, is the illusion of control. And I wonder how much the sports really are going to care about such things. Like Mike Pereira told us, an hour ago that the NFL, he doesn't think it's going to happen in the NFL with the refs because of some of the precautions that they have in place. You buying that? You confident with that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Glad we talked.
Why the lakefront is seemingly realistic to Kevin Warren. We'll see if we're buying what he's selling next on The Score.